HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
Hey there, and welcome back to the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show. This is a place of inspiration, education, and hope for a kinder, healthier, and more sustainable world. On this show, we have the privilege of hearing from local and international thought leaders who share their wisdom about some of the toughest health, environmental, and social issues we're facing today. But before delving further into today's show, I'd like to express my heartfelt gratitude for the generosity of our wonderful show sponsor, New Roots Herbal, for supporting the vision of helping the world be a better place by supporting this very special program. To learn more about New Roots Herbal and their terrific GMO-free products and services, visit newrootsherbal.com. And if you'd like to also have the opportunity to share your products or services with my terrific audience of over 350,000 monthly listeners, contact me directly through my teresanicasio.com website. In honor of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that was adopted by the United Nations in 1948, I'd like to dedicate today's program to Human Rights Day. It was just, 3 days ago, I guess? Perfect. As you'll soon discover, everything about this important day, Human Rights Day, is surprisingly relevant to the story of today's featured guest. And as we launch into our alternative health series today, we're starting an amazing series. You won't need to look too far to notice the human rights issues that are inherently relevant to patient rights in our healthcare system and also related to the basic right for untainted food and water that nourishes instead of harms our bodies and our minds. And of course, as a mental health professional, I don't like us to forget the minds part. And carrying on with that, be sure to join us next time when we will be continuing our alternative health series with the incredible honor to have with us world-renowned senior MIT research scientist, Dr. Stephanie Seneff. With us here, she's going to be talking about how glyphosate destroys your gut. You're hearing a lot about glyphosate these days, Roundup, and we're going to be hearing a whole lot more. And the information she'll be sharing is going to literally blow your socks off, both related to the impact of the negative impact of the commonly used toxic herbicide on our health, but also the less talked about micronutrient deficiencies they can cause that also play a crucial role in health and disease. And I think I mentioned to you just another maybe a recent show. If I didn't, I will be talking more about the whole impact of and the whole study of nutritional psychology and nutritional psychiatry. It is huge, folks. It is huge. And what our guest today, I gave a little sneak there, he's going to be talking about, is also going to be alluding to that. Anyway, this show with Stephanie as well is going to be a game changer in your life and in the lives of those you love. It's going to be an amazing and meaningful way to kick off the new year. For today's show, again, you got a little primer, a little prep there. We're talking about total sexy health, bringing together everything that this program is about, because we talk about health, social justice, and the environment. And so with us here today, you heard his laughter in the background. We have none other than the founder of Udo's Choice, Dr. Udo Erasmus, talking about his life journey from surviving World War II and later as a refugee from Poland to discovering the many gifts of our great planet. In 1967, I was blown away to learn that Udo gained international recognition way back then by publishing one of his research papers in one of the world's most prestigious peer-reviewed journals, Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Seriously, this is no small thing, guys. And he has made it his life work to use his scientific knowledge with his degrees in honor zoology, genetics, biochemistry, psychology, and if that wasn't enough, also nutrition, to help millions around the world. And that's you and me, folks. We are all benefiting from Udo's story. Now, he is renowned for his leadership in the world of nutrition for his discovery of flax and other omega-rich oils. But most people don't know the colorful and ugly backstory that Udo is going to be sharing with us today. A bit like the Dr. Seuss story about the bug that went ker-choo, the ironic truth is that it was because Udo was literally poisoned by pesticide spraying that we are all now benefiting from his amazing cold-pressed oils and other nutraceuticals. And I don't know about you, but I can't wait to hear how those dots got drawn. Now in his late 70s, Udo is an inspiring example of the possibilities to reverse disease and reclaim a vital and joyful life, even after really bad things happen that can seem irresistible and irreversible. No, not irresistible. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us today, Udo.
I was glad to be on.
Excellent. Well, you know, you've been in the media for I don't know how many dozens of years, and you know, talking about the oils and the other nutraceuticals, and you know, talking about Total Sexy Health now and other great things. But I was really hoping for today we could do something a little different, and for people to see the man behind the oil, you know. But it goes way back. I remember when you and I met at that New Year's Eve party just last year, and we're almost to New Year's Eve. It's like a little annual thing. And you were talking about how you were born and you were raised your early years during World War II, right in Poland, and later was a refugee. So could we start back there? And
sure.
If you could share with our listeners a bit about what it was like growing up in Poland during the war. I know you were young, but share a little bit about this.
Well, my parents came from Latvia, and Hitler and Stalin made a pact in 1938. About a non-aggression pact, and Latvia was given to the Soviet Union, and part of Germany, part of Poland, was given to Hitler. But there was nobody from Latvia or Poland at the meeting. So basically,
oh, wow.
They just took it because they were big and they could.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents lived in Latvia, and they left because the communists took everything away from everybody.
Wow.
So they had a big problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost everything they had in Latvia, and then they got given it in Poland, and I was born on a stolen farm in Poland, basically.
Wow.
And when I was not yet three, the war ended, and we were refugees, and we were fleeing from the communist tanks and trucks that were chasing us, and the Allies were using us, the refugees, mostly women and children, on horse-drawn hay wagons for target practice. And we were fleeing west towards Germany, and so we were in the crossfire, and my mother went off the road because the roads were dangerous. She went through the fields, but she had six kids with her, all of them six and under, and she left four of them behind and took two and walked through the fields, and eventually we got reunited. I got left behind, so I don't remember so much other than anxiety, fear, terror, hunger, you know, just like emotions, the feelings.
Yeah, and was your dad with you as well, or was it just your mom trying to rescue?
No, she was by herself. He was in the war.
Oh, my gosh. He was in the war still, and you guys went hiding. How long were you and because there were six of you, and four of you were left behind for a bit.
Right.
Who was overseeing you, and then how long until you were reunited?
Well, we got dropped off at a farm with a farmer that she had never met, but she had to get off the road.
Mm-hmm.
And he then took us back to Berlin to relatives, but they had already fled too. So we got dropped off in an orphanage. And then her sister went back there, which was now behind enemy lines. And because she was fluent in Russian and German, she was able to get us and eventually reunite us. I don't know how long it was, maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I don't know. But,
amazing.
it's a pretty strange story. And
And were you the youngest of the six kids then, or were you somewhere else in the...
I was, two of them were orphans whose parents had died during the war, and four were her kids. I was the youngest of her four kids. Yeah.
Wow.
So I grew up very shy and very, very inward. word. I did a lot of reading because books were safe. I didn't never thought of the world as a safe place for many, many years.
Yeah,
and it's part of the reason why I became studious. But I was also, when I was six, we were in Germany, and the adults were arguing about things that I thought were really trivial. And I thought, when I watched it, I said, there must be a better way to live, and I'm going to find out how. Mm-hmm. And that's been basically my driver all my life. That's where the that's behind the oil. That's behind the stuff that I'm doing now, Total Sexy Health. It took me 69 years to write Total Sexy Health, starting from that day.
Wow.
Basically talking about nature, human nature and health, and how when we live in line with all of those, we can live an amazing life given whatever genetic, whatever genetic program we have that tells us how long we can live. But we can live healthy. Because most of our illnesses and our problems come from living out of line with something.
Right.
And
right.
So that's the short story of the long story.
Well, there's a lot of the stories in the stories. So you were three. Okay, so you were three when you guys escaped, when you fled Poland.
Yeah.
Initially, and then you were six, you ended up in an orphanage, and then when you were six, you returned to Poland. Is that what you're saying?
No, we got reunited in Germany.
In
Germany till I was 10, and then we emigrated to Canada.
Okay, so you were in Germany when, and that was through the war then.
End of the war. The flight
end of the war.
Poland was at the end of the war. Yeah.
Okay, so that was when you were three. War ended.
Before three, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then, did your dad ever reunite with you?
Yep. He came back in 1946, so I was four by that time.
Uh huh.
And it was his idea that we would go to Canada because Canada is the vegetation, the land is very similar in Canada and Latvia.
Uh-huh.
He loved Latvia.
Yeah. Okay, I was wondering how you guys end up in Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you guys were deciding to come to Canada, did you all speak English at the time and or French or
no English. They spoke fluent Russian, Latvian, and German, and a modicum of French and English, and we basically just spoke German. So we started in grade six. I skipped a year when I came to Canada. I'm not sure why they made me do that. I skipped a year.
You didn't even speak the language, and you skipped a year.
Yeah. And I remember the first sentence we heard, it was a teacher with a blue jacket, and he pulled one of those HB pencils out of his pocket, held it up, and he said, "This is a pencil."
Wow.
That was my first sentence in English that I learned.
Wow, it was total immersion for you.
Total immersion, yeah.
Yeah, and where? Because I know it was in northern, kind of remote northern Canada. What was it called where you moved?
Oh, it was outside of Smithers.
Oh, really?
Prince Rupert, and it was 15 miles out of Smithers, and it was 112 acres of bushland that he bought for $960, and we then cleared 40 acres by hand and by horse. We didn't have electricity, no radio. He just had a German newspaper that he got every week, and he would read the whole thing cover to cover, and then instead get up, walk into the middle of the living room, and say to nobody in particular, "The world stinks." because my parents came, they went through the First World War, then the Bolshevik Revolution, then the Depression, and then the Second World War. That was their life in Europe.
Right.
They were so happy to be living in the bush with nothing.
Oh my gosh! And had he worked, or your parents worked in agriculture when they were in Latvia before, or was this all new for them?
My father had a farm in Latvia. It was like a going concern, not bushland farm. And he was trained in farming. You know, people went to school for that, and so it was not it's not like if you can't do anything else, be a farmer. It was had a little bit more class than that. And then he was given a farm in Poland. And the man who owned the farm in Poland became his farmhand during the war.
Amazing.
And, they managed to have a reasonable relationship given the circumstances.
Yeah. And the little bit that I could gather, it seems like your life on the farm, you and five siblings and your parents in a very small, very small town. Pardon?
Four siblings, yeah.
Four siblings. So you said there were six of you.
Two of them were orphans from other parents.
Uh-huh. And did all the orphans come with you as well to, and they become siblings too?
I have no idea what happened to them.
Oh, so it was just the four of you that came to Canada,
and then,
the kids.
And then I got a brother after my father came home.
Wow. So talk about, some losses too, because you had these siblings, or, the orphans who became your siblings, and then in and out of your life, and no wonder you got interested in psychology as well. And Adlerian, if not, of all things, of course. So share with our listeners a little bit about life on the farm, because I was just envisioning this cute little Udo, some of the funny things you did, and some of the wonderful things you did, and I see that as also really a big part of who you are now. And can you share a little bit about what that was like for you, and what you learned about the world in that place with no electricity, no radio, nothing, but just living on the land?
Yeah, and I liked being out in nature a lot. Not too far, because there were bears and things. But
I was wondering about that too, the wildcats and the bears,
But out of earshot of my parents, because they were pretty strict. Mm-hmm. And I was always experimenting with things, and I was always getting myself in trouble because...
Were you?
All the time.
Share an example with all of us of those times.
The example that they reminded me of pretty much every year. One year we had a Christmas tree, and we had apples hanging on the Christmas tree.
Uh-huh.
And we had little, those glass bulbs, right?
Right.
So I took the apple and the glass bulb and banged them together because I wanted to see which one was harder. And of course, the glass bulb broke.
Right, of course.
I was always pushing the limit. And in a way, I still do.
Absolutely.
How do you find out how things work if you don't do something with them? There's a lot of things I learned that I didn't believe were true. And I would always test things to find out, is it really true or not? My parents told us to question everything because they had come out of this really crazy century. And, and so they said, don't believe everything you hear, because there's a lot of fakery going on. And so how do you know what's really true if you don't experiment with it? So science is perfect for me.
That's the nature of true science, isn't it, Udo, that people forget about, and we just kind of take what we're told is supposedly scientific truth to be true, and it becomes a dogma. Dr. Bruce Lipton, I get to see him again this last weekend. I love that man. One day we'll get to have him on the show. He's brilliant. But it takes a lot of courage to challenge the status quo of thoughts, even in the scientific and even health and food communities.
And especially now, because science now has so much potential for making money, that people will cheat. Even the researchers will cheat for the grants. And in the area that I'm most familiar with, which is the area of fats, I know all the tricks people play and how they set up. If you understand how the scientific method works, you can use the scientific method to prove anything you want to prove in any direction you want to prove it. All you have to do is set the parameters of the experiment in a way that gives you the results that you're looking for. And people do that. And the more it becomes a money turf, because there was a time when people did science out of, they were usually well-to-do people who had leisure on their hands, and they just were interested in things because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the more it becomes money turf, the more... science is done with agendas.
Yeah.
And of course, when you have an agenda that you bring to it, it changes the results you're going to get, or at least the results you're going to notice, because you're not going to notice what doesn't serve your agenda.
Or the parts of the results that you choose to report.
And there's a lot of that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
An experiment that doesn't show what you want, then you bury it someplace.
Right. Or you just throw out that part of the data because it falls outside the expected realm. When I learned, I forget what which guy was a very famous psychologist. I'm blocking on his name. The solution-focused fellow, possibilitarian fellow. Anyway, he was talking about how the research with the learned helplessness with the dogs that were in the cages, and what they discovered, how the dogs were getting shocked, right, and how over time the dogs stopped fighting and crying even when they were being shocked. And how, but it turns out, I didn't find out till like 15 years ago, that it turns out that there were a few of those dogs that actually never stopped trying to escape. But they threw out that data because it didn't fit in. And so later someone was saying, hey, wait a minute, we need to look at what happened with those dogs. Those are the ones we want to study because there was something about them that we want to relish and we want to learn from. But we're going to hear more from Udo when we come back. We do need to take a short break. We're going to hear more about the man behind the oil, Udo Erasmus, founder of Udo's Choice, when we come back. So stick around.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Welcome back to the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show. If you're just tuning in, we're here with a health pioneer, Udo Erasmus, talking about his life journey and how pesticide poisoning, we're going to get to that soon. I can't wait. That sounds kind of twisted, but that's okay. But how pesticide poisoning was the surprising impetus for his creation of flax oil that we are all now having the privilege of enjoying and benefiting from. Just before the break, Udo was talking a little bit about how he was born in the war and you know, was a refugee, was in an orphanage for a while, and you know, ups and downs that were very, very difficult to start with. And when he was 10 years old, the family uprooted because they had been in Poland and then had been in Germany then through the rest of the war and after the war rather, and then they came to Canada just outside of Smithers, British Columbia, and had a big plot of land. Dad had been a farmer, and but they lived a very simple life, no electricity, no radio, but they just connected with the land. And so Udo, you know, Udo's this cute, curious little tyke. Udo, you talked in somewhere where I read, I think, about how you would go out in nature and just really connected with nature. And there was a story about spiders that I recall. can you share a little bit about that?
Well, that was another one of those childhood stories. And this was actually came out of Germany, so I was probably 6 or 7.
Oh, see, when you were younger,
So I come back to the house. My father is a farmhand on that farm. And he says, well, where are you guys? I said, playing on the meadow. He says, did you see the cows? And I said, no, but there was this little spider, because I was like my head in the grass. I'm watching this little red spider going up and down blades of grass, you know, going through the... So I didn't see the cows, but I saw the spider.
That is so sweet. Like, and, you know, when I read that... I'm pretty sure I read that. I just went to, thinking about Thoreau and, you know, and watching the War of Ants and just that the purity of that really made me smile.
Yeah, and the thing is about focus, you know. It's like I'm really good at focusing when I focus. So I'll be sitting at my kitchen table, and the doorbell is maybe 4 feet behind my ears. And somebody will ring the doorbell, and if I'm focused on something that I'm doing, I won't hear the doorbell.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so and in a way, the spider in the grass was like that too, right? I was focused on the spider, and I was like that, you know, what you focus on becomes your whole world. That's what you get
to know.
So focus determines where we end up, simply because that's where we learn what the world is.
Yeah. So in addition to being a natural young scientist, you were also a natural young meditator in being able to do that focus and in focusing your mind on different things. which you know, got into, you end up, you know, studying. I can't believe anybody got as many degrees as you have. But one other little story I'm just curious about is it's something about collecting skulls of animals. What was that about?
Well, I had a summer job when I was going to university at UBC, University of British Columbia.
Uh-huh.
I had a summer job in mining exploration. And that was always out in the woods. We lived in tents, and they would fly in and airdrop our steaks and our foods to us. And at one point, we had a cache with food in it, and Wolverine got in and started stealing the food, and the cook shot the Wolverine.
Oh, no.
And what I did is I liked skulls, and we used to find skulls. I had found a baby deer skull at one point. And then there were bird skulls, and I had some wolf skulls, bear skulls, and a wolverine skull. And what I did is I cleaned them off because I loved the shape of the skulls. And then I sent them in a tobacco tin. I sent them to my little brother, who became a science teacher, and he had my skulls in his class for the students to look at.
That is so amazing. That is really, really amazing. So lots of little colorful stories. So let's get to this whole UBC business, because here you were in this tiny town living with no electricity, very simple life, you know, growing organic. I understand all of you, each of you kids had a little plot on the land to do your own part of the organic farming, which is brilliant. But somehow
That was before organic farming, so we didn't call it organic, but we weren't using pesticides.
It was just farming.
It was organic.
Yeah, of course it was, right? You weren't putting pesticides on. But then, so if you can talk a little bit about, because you had a whole bunch of jobs, and you also ended up going to the big city. I mean, that was a thing. Can you talk a little bit about you know, kind of the jobs you had and this transition from being a kid on the farm who was you know, a bookworm and was crazy about science from the time you were born practically. And then you got into school, and then you went into this whole other big world of different jobs and university. Can you start talking a little bit about you know, what that was like, and also some of the things you learned along the way?
When I came to UBC, that was definitely, I was off the farm. I lived in the Okanagan as well. We did fruit picking. That's what we did during summers. And I worked on a dairy farm one year. So I got the collection of all the different kinds of farmings.
Mm-hmm.
But then I came to UBC, and first I started in science, like physics, chemistry, math. I was really good at it, but I found it really boring because they didn't teach us any of the applications.
Mm-hmm.
So the first year I didn't really work very hard, and I failed the year. Learned how to play bridge, eat with chopsticks, and spend a lot of time in a place called International House.
I remember I have. Yeah, of course.
different races and different cultures. And that was really interesting to me because we didn't have that on the farm.
Right.
And then I got into, and of all the courses I took, the only ones that I really liked was my biology courses. So I ended up changing after the first year. I got focused on biological sciences and then really took that on, and psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I think about it now is I took science to understand how things work.
Mm-hmm.
Then I took biological sciences to understand how creatures work.
Mm-hmm.
Then I did psychology to understand how thinking works.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was all in how can, you know, there must be a better way for people to live together.
Yeah.
You know, from my, when I was six. So
that's been
my driver. There must be a better way to live than this.
Right.
And so they were all trying to understand, because if you're gonna make things better, you got to understand the nature of things.
Yes. And not just from a micro level. I mean, the micro level is important, you know, watching the spider go up and down blades of grass. And, but there's the micro and the macro, and you experience.
Yeah, but on every level. Yeah, we're talking from electrons to galaxy.
Right, and the mind, body, and spirit.
But living on this planet, then the biology becomes really important, nature.
Mm-hmm.
But that's more immediate because the galaxy is a long ways away.
Mm-hmm.
And then how people think, because you want to understand how people work and how to work with people, then you have to understand how thinking works.
Right, of course.
That's where a lot of our problems come from, because the ability to imagine has an upside, which is its creativity, and has a downside, and that's that we can lie our asses off.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be our greatest gift as well as the greatest beast. And again, living, you know, we always say that we learn by contrast, you know, and we learn by contrast and living, you know, starting with being born and living in a war-torn place. This is a way that that's one extreme, and then moving to a place of peace, you know, Canada, that was, you know, it's one of many examples of that. Now, we do have to take another break, and after the break, Udo is going to share with us about how, again, of all people, Udo sprayed pesticides on plants. We got to hear about how that happened, and then what happened because he ended up getting poisoned, and how that connected to ultimately his discovery of oils and fats and the importance of those for health. So stick around, we're going to hear all about that when we come back after the break.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show, here today with co-founder of Supplement Brand, talking about how adversity can offer incredible opportunities for learning and transformation. And as I mentioned just before the break, Udo's going to talk with us about how he, it's kind of mind-blowing, how he got into spraying pesticides and then became poisoned, and then used his brilliance, his curiosity, his scientific curiosity, and somehow figured out a connection with oils and fats. I cannot wait to hear all about this. So, Udo, let's start with, how the heck did you end up spraying pesticides? What after growing up on, you know?
After I left university, I started taking all kinds of blue-collar jobs because I wanted to know what it felt like to be in the shoes of the people who did those jobs. It wasn't like this was not a career path, at least the way I thought about it, but I just wanted to know, what's it like to be a fisherman? What's it like to be a logger? What's it like to be working in the mines? So I did all kinds of jobs like that. And I had a gardening job, and part of the gardening job is I got a pesticide sprayer's license. I got 99.5% on the exam. And then I ended up with then my marriage broke up. We had three kids, and it's a long story, but my marriage broke up, and I was really upset, and I wanted to kill something. So I took a full-time job as a pesticide sprayer.
Really seriously? Careless,
seriously. Really careless. Used to walk across over the lawns I sprayed till the skin peeled off the bottom of my feet. So then I wore rubber boots. It was a summer job, and I liked to get a tan, so I did it in a bathing suit and rubber boots.
Oh, my God.
And after 3 years of doing that, I got poisoned by the pesticide I sprayed. It's like a predictable outcome. What you put out comes back. And I went to the doctor. Doctor said, we don't have anything for pesticide poisoning. And because I had the background in biochemistry and genetics, and I understood science, biological sciences pretty well, and I had taken a year of medicine but gone back to biological sciences because I learned more about health in biological sciences than in medicine. In medicine, you learn about disease. And so I used that and went into the journals to look at if the body's made out of food, then if something goes wrong, then you need to look at your food supply. Mm-hmm. So that was the idea. So I started looking at health and nutrition, disease and nutrition in Medline, the big database, 16 million studies in it, and discovered how much damage is done to oils when they're being processed as well as when they're being used. They're our most sensitive nutrients. They're damaged by light, oxygen, and heat. They need the most care, and they're actually the food that gets the least care because we don't take anything else and throw it in the frying pan and turn it into smoke, but we do that with oil. And so they're super damaged when we do that, and you get maybe in the processing 1% damage, and a tablespoon of oil will give you more than a million damaged molecules for every one of your body's 60 trillion cells. And when I saw that, I said, I can't get healthy on oils like that. We should make them with health in mind. And so that was the idea of making oils with health in mind, which means very tight production system so that light, oxygen, and heat can't get to the oil from the time it's closed in the seed to the time it's closed in the bottle. And that
okay, before you go further, Udo, just pause.
Yeah.
How did you make the connection of the pesticide poisoning and oils or fats? How did your brain? I'm trying to get into your brain. I'm a psychologist, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I can't help myself. How did your brain go to that?
Well, what happened? We were at Ioco and we were spraying soil sterilants, and when we went to the lunchroom, they wouldn't let us to use their cleanup facilities. So I started eating my sandwich, and I got some off my sandwich, and I just like it just knocked me off. So I basically had cramps, nausea, dizziness. If I turned my head, it felt like my head turned, but my brain didn't. Of course, that's not possible, but that's what it felt like. And then I had no energy. I was 38 years old, and if I walked around a city block, I had to sit down and rest. So I was like an 80-year-old.
Wow.
And it was obvious what had happened. And then I tried to get to the government that had certified me to spray and told them that I had gotten poisoned. They tried to tell me I had a flu, and they wouldn't let me look into the journal articles they have on pesticide poisoning. So I went to Greenpeace and got the information from Greenpeace, found out I had cancer to look forward to, and then decided to get into what can I do for self-help. And I had this background, and so when I found out that the oils are damaged, we should make them with health in mind. And the year after I got poisoned, when I was already looking, omega-3s were established as essential nutrients, which means you can't make them, you got to have them. They got to come from food. If you don't get enough, you go down. If you don't get enough long enough, you die. So this is really important stuff. And if you bring them back while you're going down before you die, then all the problems that come from not getting enough are reversed. That's the definition of an essential nutrient. Omega-3s are essential. And then I went ballistic. I said, oh, my God, we could help so many people, because 99% of the population doesn't get enough omega-3. If they get any, they're damaged, because they're damaged even more than the omega-6s. And if we could bring omega-3s and optimize them in people's diets, we could literally help 99% of the population.
Okay.
And we went ballistic. We did a tour in a van, the hottest month of the year, 101 days, ate nothing but raw vegetables because meat made us tired and carbs made us sleepy. And we told everybody we could about flaxseed oil. Why flaxseed oil? Because it's the richest source of omega-3s. And within 2 years, flaxseed oil was the second highest selling oil in the natural foods trade. And it was, I mean, we created a buzz. We were just on fire. It was so fun.
It wasn't just you. And you went from learning about fats to somehow producing them. And who did you do that with?
Well, I designed the method of production, and then I worked with some friends who were interested in, I guess they kind of got caught up in my slipstream, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started working with them. One guy was on welfare, one guy was on social assistance or workers' comp, and so these were not technical people. And I call it my social project because I didn't make any money on the flax oil, but flax oil is now a $1 billion industry. I think I made $8,635 on the whole deal. But I wasn't doing it for money. I was just saying, oh, my God, we could help so many people. And
you wanted to help the world.
And I knew we could get it done. But I never really thought about what do I want out of it financially. So that's why I didn't get much out of it financially.
And how long did it take for you, once you started using the oil on yourself, how long before you started to feel like, because you said that the regular doctors couldn't help you, how long before you started to feel better?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't the oil primarily that got me better. What I did is I did some fasting. I started taking supplements. I started eating really clean. Mm-hmm. The oil didn't come till 5 years. But what the oil has done is increases energy by 40 to 60% if you take enough of the right kind of oil. And we made a blend called Udo's oil that is better balanced. And that we've measured on athletes, 40 to 60% increase in stamina within a month of taking a tablespoon for 50 pounds of body weight per day, mixed in food spread out over the course of the day.
Amazing. All right, guys. So we've got some of the backstory of where Udo's choice, Udo's oil, came from. This is so exciting. We have another break, but we still have another segment with Udo, and we're going to hear more about his Total Sexy Health Project and how he is bringing everything together to help you and me and everyone else with the information that he has learned through his incredible journey in life. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show. We're here today with nutrition revolutionary and award-winning author of Fats That Heal, Fats That Kill, Udo Erasmus, talking about his discoveries and his newest vision for total sexy health. He says, if you've been hearing this story today, I was just telling Udo during break how something I really love here. He's 77 years old, and yet I still hear the voice of the six-year-old who is bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and so passionate about life and living and people and making a difference. So Udo, can you share with our audience, this is such an exciting part of your life, being able to culminate everything you've learned together.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about what your vision for Total Sexy Health is.
So Total Healthy Health, Total Sexy Health comes out of that original thought I had. There must be a better way to live, and I'm going to find out how. When I started working in health, I noticed that inspiration was as important as information, because mm-hmm. if you didn't inspire people with me in what you were doing, they wouldn't put the information into practice.
Mm-hmm.
So then
that's
I was
true.
Like, well, what else affects health? And if you really look at it, actually everything affects health. Who you hang out with affects health, what you eat affects health, how you sleep affects health, how you breathe affects health, your posture affects your health, what the environment is like or what you're doing to the environment affects your health, and how present you are in your own space majorly affects health. So mm-hmm. After university, I actually did my last thing. I did science and then bioscience and then psychology, and eventually I got to self-knowledge because I actually wanted to know how I work.
Mm-hmm.
And so self-knowledge is you spend time with yourself, getting really quiet, discovering what there is within you. And there's a lot within it. Everything we're looking for to fulfill our lives, everything we're looking for on the outside is actually already built into us.
Mm-hmm.
But because we spend so much time going out through our senses and very little time going back in, most people live ignorant of that. That's where most of the solutions for the problems that humanity has in the world come from our disconnection from ourselves. When we get disconnected from the magnificence of our own lives, then we feel discontent. Then we start having negative thoughts. Then that they become negative words. Then those become destructive actions, and those have destructive consequences. And to fix that, you know, right now we're talking about the environment a lot. You know, we had a certain state of being out of which we hammered the environment and damaged it in many ways. Like we knocked down 75% of the trees that we had on the planet. There were 10 trillion. There are now 2.5 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that out of a state of being. To fix all of that, it's not just let's just plant the trees. We won't plant them if our state of being doesn't change, because our state of being defines our perception, and it also creates our world. And so in order to fix a problem we've created, we need to first change our state of being,
mm-hmm.
and then we will create a different world out of that state of being. So that's
mm-hmm.
that's all the internal stuff. And there are three main things. One is that we're not looking at. One is internal awareness. That's like when you're looking out of your eyes, who's looking? What is the awareness that is looking? Within that awareness, our entire life unfolds. So internal awareness. The second one is life energy. That's where we get our juice from. That's where our power is. If we're in touch with our power, we have that power available. If we're not in touch with it, then, and especially then if we get tied up in thoughts in our head, especially negative thoughts in our head, then we lose our experience of our energeticness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the second one. The third one is inspiration, and that just comes out of being in touch with life energy. Then there's the physical body, and we know about that. food and fitness is what we usually talk about. That's physical body. Then there's survival smarts, how you deal with crisis, what kind of skills you have dealing with the things that come up in normal life. Then there's the people you hang out with, social group. And social group affects your health. That's why sometimes as kids we used to yell at each other, "You make me sick!" Because we understood, even as kids, that who we hang out with and how our behavior, how our interactions are, affects our health. Then the seventh one is nature, planet, solar system. And then the last one is infinite awareness, or the big picture of the fact that here I am in a temporary body in an infinite universe, and knowing that I can putz around and do what I do, and at one point the body is going to fail and life will separate from it, and to be okay with that.
Mm-hmm. That's so beautiful.
To live in acceptance of the facts of life. And when we live aligned to all eight of those, then we end up having the best life. Each one
That's
needs a
great.
Different kind of attention. Each one needs attention on a regular basis, goes off in a different way, responds to a different kind of intervention. Total Sexy Health is a book that's an overview of looking at that whole big picture.
So be sure to check out his book, which you can find a direct link right on his page on the TeresaNicasio.com website, folks. I want to thank you, Udo, and all of you listening for joining us today and for the empowerment and remembering of who we are, Udo, on this. And I'd also like to thank, again, our wonderful show sponsor, New Roots Herbal, for making this program possible. Be sure to join us next time when we'll be continuing our Alternative Health Series with Dr. Stephanie Seneff, talking about how glyphosate destroys your gut. It's going to be an amazing show. And the story, she's got a story to go with that as well. To learn more about all of our guests, Udo and everyone else we've had, and as we get more people, it just continues to grow, and the wellness resources that are all free, visit the Teresa Wellness Hub at TeresaNicasio.com. I'm Teresa, and this has been the Dr. Teresa Nicasio Show. Until next time, take a moment to acknowledge our shared humanity, as Udo was talking about, honoring who we are. That beauty inside that is everywhere, especially in honor of Human Rights Day. Adios.
Thank you, Teresa.
You're welcome, Udo. Thank you.